You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. Today's episode, which is being dropped on the 10th day of February 2021. Oh my God, we're already halfway through February. It's going to be pitchers and catchers reporting soon. I'm going to be doing a What If Wednesday, but I'm going to the archives for this What If Wednesday because back in 2014, I was responding to an article written by Jesse Spector about the 1994 strike and was it worth it, but also what would have happened if the strike didn't take place. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts and you're staying at home during these trying times. Be sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows in the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Today, which is hosted by the great Peter Bukowski. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod. I'm your pal Sully. Send your Sunday requests to Sully Baseball on Twitter. I'm also at Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Yeah, back in August of 2015, when I was actually in Texas, this was the day I was going to a game at the, I think it was called the ballpark in Arlington then. They changed the name so many times. I'm just called the ballpark in Arlington. And Jesse Spector, wonderful writer, had just come out with an article where he had spoke with Mike Piazza about whether or not the strike of 1994 was, in the end, productive. Kind of a scorched earth sort of thing. And listening back to this, it turned into, first of all, it fits in perfectly with the What If Wednesday, but also it goes to show you that some of the seeds of what have been planted for any potential labor strife in 2021 and beyond was already in place when I was talking about the state of baseball in 2014 when this aired as an episode of the Sully Baseball Daily Podcast. So, recorded from Plano, Texas, where I was staying at the time for work reasons, here I am talking about the what-ifs of the 1994 strike.
Now, let's get to the topic I wanted to talk about. Really interesting article in the sportingnews.com that I read today. Jesse Spector of Sporting News, you should follow him on Twitter. He does a lot of great stuff on Major League Baseball for the Sporting News. Follow him at Jesse Spector. Had a great article today about the 1994 strike. Now, the strike was 20 years ago, and there's been no baseball work stoppage since then. And keeping that in mind, he talked with Mike Piazza about whether or not the 1994 strike turned out to be a positive thing. Whether or not having that moment where a great season was scrapped and potential World Series matchups and historic seasons, historic individual seasons, historic seasons for individual teams may have absolutely have changed the face of baseball had the 94 season continued, would we have a baseball which continued to be filled with strife, filled with labor disagreements, and what would have gone moving forward? And he puts forward the basically a alternative universe, one where the Expos won the World Series, one where Tony Gwynn batted 400, one where Matt Williams passed Roger Maris. But the labor piece kept being swept underneath the carpet and to the point where it would explode and manifest in different ways, which would include in season-long lockouts or strikes like what happened with hockey in 2004, and seeing new leagues and seeing new competition, essentially seeing baseball disintegrate because there was no bottom. You needed to reach bottom, and the bottom was the cancellation of the 1994 World Series. And the discussion with Mike Piazza pointed that out. I think it's an interesting notion. I think that there's good and bad qualities to it. I think that we are now two decades removed from it. We're starting to see the first batch of players coming into the minor leagues and soon to the major leagues who were born after the strike, which is mind-boggling for me. I graduated from college. I graduated from NYU in 1994. And I have very, very strong memories of that year and thinking and hoping it was going to be like 1985. I don't know if you remember what happened in 1985, but the owners and the players were locking antlers, and there was a work stoppage. There was a strike, and it lasted one game. It was a one-day work stoppage, and they came back and they finished the season because they didn't want to have what happened in 1981 happen again. But what happened after that one-day work stoppage was collusion. The owners said, well, then we're going to collude. They might as well have just said it like that because it was as plain on the nose on everyone's face. And what happened after the whole, you know, it's a whole domino effect. When people wanted to talk about what was happening in the strike, like everything in the universe, it is a chain reaction of events. Players challenged the reserve clause in the 60s. Players' challenge of the reserve clause begin with Curt Flood standing up, and then a legal test involving Catfish Hunter, and then Messersmith and McNally challenge the reserve clause. Then we have free agency. Teams don't like free agency. They try to have a compensation draft. There's a strike over that. It's settled. Then they try to curb the free agent prices. They want to implement a salary cap. There's a one-day work stoppage. They boot out the new commissioner in 1992, knuckled down on wanting to have a salary cap in 1992. There's nearly a strike in 1993. In 1994, there's a strike, and that spring training, there's a lockout. They're all connected. You know, you can't just say, well, the players just want more money. The owners want more money. It was never that simple. These things never are, which is one of the reasons why it became so frustrating that summer, when all I wanted to do right out of college was just watch as much baseball as possible. There was great, great baseball going on, phenomenal baseball going on. In New York City, where I was living, the Yankees, who kind of flirted with contention in 1993 before fading out and losing the division to the much superior Toronto Blue Jays, were a legit contender for the first time. This was the first time they'd split the divisions into three, the first time there was a wild card. And you saw great individual seasons. Obviously, Tony Gwynn, we remember he was batting 390-something, 394, I think it was, and was heating up. We saw that Frank Thomas and Jeff Bagwell were having wonderful years. Kenny Lofton had a remarkable season. And then the strike happened. And I remember being just wanting to, all I wanted to do was enjoy it. It was great baseball. And it was baseball being played in places that you hadn't seen play for a while and be good for a while. And all you kept hearing were Fear, Ravitch, Selig, you know, contract negotiation, labor peace. And I was siding with the players, actually. I didn't believe the owners when they were saying that teams were about to go bankrupt. The main reason I didn't believe them is because I said, well, they just expanded. And they're going to try to expand again. And what kind of business model do you have when you say, well, if you are losing money, create new teams? And I also said these were the same owners who colluded. And Bud Selig, remember, at the time was a new commissioner. He came in at the end of the 1992 season, and he was one of the owners who was found guilty of collusion. This isn't a crazy conspiracy theory. This isn't the magic bullet theory. These are facts. They were found guilty of collusion. He was one of them. So I said, oh, we got a colluding owner pretending to be the commissioner of baseball. And now suddenly they're saying, oh, we're going bankrupt. They won't open the books, and they're going to expand. I said, they're lying. They have a history of lying. You don't get the benefit of the doubt. And that's something that's always bothered me about Bud Selig, that he should not have got the benefit of the doubt. I believe the commissioner's office should be a third party of checks and balances between the players and the owners. And instead, you had an owner then, and there was so much vitriol. Mike Piazza mentions this in the article. There was so much vitriol. There was so much anger. There was so much mistrust of the owners from the players that, of course, they weren't going to believe what they were saying. They just were found guilty. They're liars. Why would I believe a word you're saying? But the way that went about was a strike. Now, I brought up it being 20 years ago. I was just crushed, and I didn't exactly have the greatest summer of my life the first year out of college. It was not a great time for me, personally. And when I was really hitting a low point of that year, that first year out of college, I didn't have baseball to lean on. Now, I did have the Ken Burns baseball special came out, and I wound up living with my cousin Dave, who, you know, had as much to do with making my life back on track as anyone on the planet Earth, and we would read the baseball encyclopedia, and we would watch old baseball games together. But the fact of the matter is that I didn't have that, and I was angry. And even though I sided with the players, I was angry that it got to that point. I didn't have that crutch. And there was no sense of completion. You think back to 1994, there was no sense of, and boom, we have it. It left in the middle of August, right around now. And the one thing we remember about every year, what's the first five or six things you remember about every season, with very few exception, are what happened down the stretch run and what happened in the postseason. And we didn't have that. We didn't have that at all. Now, did you think about some of the things that could have happened? You know, you go through ad nauseum the whole, you know, Gwynn and Ken Griffey Jr. and Matt Williams and the Greg Maddux's brilliant season and everything like that. And people remember the Montreal Expos had the single greatest season of their lives going on. People forget that this was the first time that the Yankees were really, really contenders because the Blue Jays had fallen out. That for the first time in a generation, the Yankees were a legit pennant contender.
You know, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. I don't want to hear any other names. You just take those names right out of your mouth because the bars are even new. They're improved. Great flavors. My favorite ones, thanks for asking, German chocolate cake, banana bread, lemon almond cheesecake, mint brownie are all good. I love the raspberry. All the bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. And they're also healthy. If you're a health conscious person, you want to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Great for the keto diet. Let's take one of my favorite ones, which is cookies and cream, which has 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, only 4 grams net carb. You get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. You go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. You know, I am driving my car a little bit more than I had a few months ago because I'm going into work. But I got to make sure I maintain my car. And sometimes I got to get stuff for my car so I, you know, don't have to take it to the auto shop. And chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics. Do-it-yourselfers like your pal Sully. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible, rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody, does not require membership or account login. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in there. How did you hear about us box? So they know that we sent you. Amazing selection and reliably low prices. All the parts that your car will ever need at rockauto.com. February is Black History Month, and the Locked On Podcast Network is honoring the challenges and success of Black men and women in sports with a new series called Locked On Presents More Than the Game. This week, Candace Cooper of Locked On Tar Heels and Erica Ayala of Locked On Women's Basketball discuss the opportunities and challenges that come with being a Black woman in sports. Subscribe to the Locked On Presents podcast feed on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, let's get back to the discussion about the 1994 strike.
Now, what we also forget, it was the first, would have been the right out of the gate test of the danger of having a three division system, because the Rangers were 10 games under 500 and in first place in the American League West. The Los Angeles Dodgers were just two games above 500 and were in first place in the National League West. So you would have had the purists, and probably would have been me, because I was not a fan of the wild card initially, screaming that, well, we're going to have a sub-500 team in the playoffs. Really? That's what it's come down to? But besides the Expos, there's two other, and besides the Yankees, you had two other storylines. The Chicago White Sox, remember, you know, people who have talked about what the World Series might have been in 1994, and at the time of the strike, the Yankees and the Expos had the best records, which is the reason why Buck Showalter and Felipe Alou were the managers in the All-Star game the next year. The White Sox had a good team. They had a real good team. And they, you know, beyond just Frank Thomas, they had a really good pitching staff, and they were a team that got to within two games of the World Series in 1993. But lest we forget, this was the first year of Jacobs Field. This was the first year of Cleveland and the Cleveland revival. Everyone remembers 1995 and the fact that they won 100 games in a shortened season. And they got all the way to the World Series. They got to Game 6 of the World Series. And Cleveland was going bananas and everything like that. At the time of the strike, they were only one game back of the Chicago White Sox. They may have been the team to go all the way. Now, granted, they didn't have as strong a pitching staff in 1994 as they did in the next season. The acquisition of Oral Hershiser went a long way to that. But you would have had that moment of seeing Chicago and Cleveland battling down the stretch. And we missed that. And we missed all that. And we had the prolonged labor strike. And there's been labor peace ever since. Now, you got to weigh the two sides of it. You have to weigh, was it worth that? Was it worth the damage that it did? Was it worth having the empty seats? Was it worth the steroid era? Because even Bud Selig, as he, you know, tries to pretend that he had no idea about this or that, he even said at one point, my sport was in trouble. Of course, the subtext being the fans wanted to see the big, huge home run hitters. What was he going to do about it? Of course, the notion of steroids were already out there. Joe Garagiola brought it up during the 1988 World Series. That was before Bart Giamatti was the commissioner of baseball, let alone Faye Vincent and Bud Selig. But they needed that to get the fannies in the seats after the strike. Everything's connected. Everything is connected. But was it worth it? We are now 20 years, a generation has come of age as baseball fans. Now, whether or not young kids are watching baseball or not, that's a whole other podcast discussion, and certainly something baseball has to address moving forward. But the fact of the matter is, if you are 20, using my rule of seven, that you don't really remember anything in terms of sports and the world or anything before you're 7 years old. If you're 27 years old or younger, you don't remember a strike. You don't remember labor strife. You don't remember the baseball, the headlines being dominated by lawyers and the scowling faces of Don Fear and Bud Selig, which in many ways made it so much worse that fall. That not only were we not seeing the players, but Don Fear always looked pissed. And Bud Selig always had the lip thing going. Now, they both look like dour people. So I don't want to see your face. I want to see Gwynn. I want to see Maddox. I want to see Griffey. Who the hell are you? So, was it worth it? We have had these decades. And we know that Selig has moved away. We know Fear has already moved away. The one problem with that moving forward, you know, the article by Spector made the analogy to the Civil War, that we needed to have the Civil War in order to move forward as a country. One of the things that happened before the Civil War is a lot of the really brilliant political minds and a lot of the minds who helped shape the nation in between the founders and the generation that opened up the Civil War, whether it's the Daniel Websters or the Henry Clays of the world. Well, when they died, a new generation took over and went right cannonballing into the Civil War. Now, I'm wondering if we have a new generation of people running the show, running the Commissioner of Baseball, running the Players Association. These are people who don't have the memory of what happened in 1994. That's critical, because that haunting memory has been, probably more than anything in the world, been the thing that makes people realize we got to come up with a solution because we can't afford this. And you can't afford a work stoppage. You can't. Because the world is different than it was in 1994 and 1995. Our attention spans are shorter in terms of entertainment. You didn't have the opportunity to just click on stuff like you have now. Oh, you had lots of cable stations. It's not at all the same. We have devices. I can sit in the middle of a cornfield, and if I get some sort of a signal, I can tap a button and watch any movie I want. You think that people are going to wait for baseball? You can't have another labor stoppage. But I was thinking about some other things, and this new generation has to understand that. Otherwise, it's doomed. Absolutely doomed. Nothing is gained by knuckling down. Everyone's making lots of money. Figure out how to carve it out. You know, people talk about what would have happened if we had not had the strike, and what would have happened. The main thing that people talk about are the Montreal Expos. And would we still have the Expos if they had won the World Series? Think about this. If there was no strike, chances are Joe Torre's not in the Hall of Fame. Because if the Yankees got to the World Series, and Don Mattingly got to the World Series, and Buck Showalter led them to the World Series, chances are he earns another year. Chances are the pressure to not fire him would have been too great, even for Steinbrenner, who had that pressure to not fire Torre because he came out of the gate as a champion. If Showalter is still the manager in 96, 97, and maybe Mattingly is still there, and it's a much different team moving forward, you don't have the same team under Torre as you'd have under Showalter. You may still have a very successful team in New York, but it would have been a very different team in New York and probably still would have had the volatile outcomes. And maybe Showalter and Steinbrenner would have butted heads several times. That I don't know. Girardi's certainly not involved with the Yankees, and maybe there isn't the core four and everything like that. If the White Sox had won the World Series at that point, which is extremely possible, you have a different aura of Frank Thomas, as he would have been the man to pick up the mantle right after Jordan left, right after Jordan retired, or kind of retired, or did the little things that he did. If the Expos had won, if the Indians had won, if the Rangers had won with a sub-500 team, the wild card may have been considered to be a disaster. And maybe it's scrapped. There are so many what-ifs. And the very fabric, and not just of how baseball is constructed, but how we look at baseball history. If the home run record is paced by Matt Williams, then we don't have the Sosa-McGuire race. If we don't have the Sosa-McGuire race, we don't have the jealous Barry Bonds. If we don't have the jealous Barry Bonds, we don't have him ballooning up. We don't have him ballooning up. Guess what? He's in the Hall of Fame right now. And Joe Torre's not. All things to think about 20 years later.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. A podcast from 2014 is super relevant right now. Go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. Go to all the places where you get your podcasts when you're staying at home. Tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB. Or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including checking out Locked On Presents More Than the Game. This has been Locked On MLB for the 10th day, February 2021. I'm yours, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sullivan.